Stay tuned after the show for a message from Nokia.
Before the end of the year, I predict we will have a very successful vaccine, therapeutic, and cure.
Is it possible that there ends up not being a vaccine for coronavirus?
It's totally possible.
Definitely.
We're making tremendous progress. I deal with these incredible scientists, doctors, very, very closely. I have great respect for their minds.
Even if we do get a likely candidate that's going to work in the next few months, healthy people in their 20s and 30s who are working in non-essential jobs are not going to be first in line for this vaccine. So realistically, people like me or you guys are not going to see a vaccine until probably spring or summer of next year.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, health reporters Sarah Overmall and Dan Diamond give the hard truths about a vaccine for coronavirus.
So scientists are working at record speed, and there's a few reasons for that. First of all, Dr. Fauci earlier this year promised that he felt that we could have a vaccine within 12 to 18 months if everything went okay. We're largely still on that timeline for a few different reasons. So first of all, the Chinese government shared the sequence of the virus almost immediately on a public database, allowing scientists the world over to begin working on vaccines. Then regulators in the US and in other parts of the world started being flexible with the sort of requirements they needed to move through these trials. So animal studies were being done at the same time as human studies. People were able to move more swiftly into the next phase of trials. And all that is to say that this is being moved at record rate. It's worth noting that the fastest ever developed vaccine was one for mumps, and it took 4 years. So this would be an unprecedented achievement if we have a vaccine this year. But all that's to say, the timeline has been accelerated, but there's no promise that once something gets to the phase three, the final phase of this study, that it's going to be a vaccine that works. And so they've set everything up for a vaccine to go through fast, but it still comes down to whether the science works. And the reason why phase three, especially with vaccines, takes such a long time is because you're going to be dosing tens of thousands of healthy people and seeing whether they come in contact with the virus and then they block the virus. And so if you think about that, you have tens of thousands of healthy people with this potential vaccine dose. You have tens of thousands with a placebo dose. There needs to be a certain level of exposure in both of those groups to make sure that you know it works. And if we don't have enough coronavirus by the time those trials start, which they're supposed to be starting this fall, it might be hard to get those answers.
Dan, once we have a vaccine, if it's shown to work, whenever that is that the end? Like, is it coronavirus response success at that point? Life goes back to normal for people across America?
I don't know if life will ever go back to normal post-coronavirus. We may still have all those people watching season four of Ozark who don't want to come back out. But the more serious answer is it's definitely not the end. It's the beginning of a new stage. There will have to be some education campaign to get people to take the vaccine. We know that vaccine hesitancy has risen in recent years. There's nothing like a deadly disease to convince skeptics that maybe a vaccine isn't such a bad idea after all. But then if you add in the politics of COVID-19, let's say a vaccine is rushed, it is made available even before the election or before the next inauguration. Will Democrats who hate President Trump be skeptical of it and fearful of getting vaccinated? I do think there will be questions about the long-term effects, too, of vaccines that are rushed into the population, as well as the long-term fallout of COVID on people who maybe had it, maybe had mild symptoms, but there are flare-ups in years to come. So we are, unfortunately, at the beginning of a humanity-changing experience, and it will take years and years before we fully understand what we've gone through.
A theme we've seen from the Trump administration throughout the response to the coronavirus is a lot of eagerness, like we saw with pushing hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for the virus. Sarah, what happens if in the development of the vaccine, the Trump administration tries to put too much pressure on speed?
There's definitely already concern about that because of things like hydroxychloroquine and because The 2020 election is coming up, and there's worry that the president is going to want to have something to point to and say, I solved it. The pandemic's over. What's going to be really interesting is that a lot of doctors and a lot of the health officials that are on this have been saying, we are speeding this up, but not at the expense of safety and effectiveness. But what they have been promising, whether it be Dr. Anthony Fauci or the Department of Defense's head on this, Matthew Hepburn, they have been assuring that we will get some sort of answers by the end of this year or January, but we don't know what those answers are going to be. So by the end of the year is after the elections. We can't be saying, we can be making promises in October or November that we have a vaccine that's going to work. We won't have those solid answers then. We're going to have a sort of outreach campaign, regardless of what happens in the 2020 election, to assure people that, yes, though this moved at record speed, here's how we did not cut corners on safety and effectiveness, and here's why we are confident in this vaccine. I've talked to health officials who are already thinking about ways to do that. There's also state officials who are talking about ways that they should be doing that and reaching out to underserved populations. And I know that Surgeon General Jerome Adams has spoken about this before with me and probably with Dan about, you know, reaching out to populations that already have skepticism about the health system and helping them understand why this is going to be okay.
Well, Dan, where is the White House on this? What has President Trump been saying?
What President Trump has been saying is often incorrect. This week at a police reform event, he talked about an AIDS vaccine that does not exist.
These are the people, the best, the smartest, the most brilliant anywhere. And they've come up with the AIDS vaccine.
And then again suggested that coronavirus could simply go away over time.
I think we're going to have a very, very good answer to that very, very soon. I always say, even without it, it goes away.
There's no evidence of that either. The White House has been pretty quiet on COVID in recent days. The daily task force briefing has been gone for 50 days now. Vice President Mike Pence took to the pages of the Wall Street Journal to criticized the media for, he said, spreading fear about coronavirus while acknowledging that we still have a raging pandemic. So I think the White House is trying to figure out how to shift the conversation towards its work on vaccination while not playing up that the coronavirus continues to be a major killer around the country. And the White House did make some officials available this week who are working on Operation Warp Speed, who are working on this vaccine push. And I think that's a realization that in the absence of information, without daily briefings from the likes of Tony Fauci, there is going to be concern and question about what is going on behind the scenes. And outlets like Politico are going to be digging in to find out if the president is inappropriately pressuring his team to rush results before they're ready.
I would add to that that the FDA commissioner, Stephen Hahn, has assured us that he has not been pressured and that he's thinking of this in terms of the science only. But it's also been interesting to watch how the president's rhetoric around what's going to solve the pandemic has changed. So I remember early on when it was made clear to him that a vaccine could not be rushed past a certain point, he started talking about how, you know, really the treatments that we have, like hydroxychloroquine or like remdesivir, an infusion from Gilead, how those are really what we need and not vaccines. And so he would talk those up. And now, of course, because hydroxychloroquine is no longer an option, and because we understand that, you know, prevention of the disease is ultimately going to be what ends the pandemic, they've gone back to talking about vaccines. But like Dan was saying, the president has made inaccurate statements about vaccines before, not just his gaffe this week saying that there's an AIDS vaccine when there's not, but before he was president, he questioned the safety and effectiveness of vaccines as well.
Is it possible that there ends up not being a vaccine for coronavirus?
It's totally possible.
Definitely.
I mean, this would be the first coronavirus vaccine if it is created. Other coronaviruses that we know a lot about, MERS and SARS, we had deadly outbreaks of those, and we don't have vaccines for those. Those outbreaks ended through the containment measures that we're using right now. The problem is that this virus, COVID-19, is very infectious, and it spreads through asymptomatic contact as well, which is something we didn't know at the beginning of this outbreak.
Dan, what does it mean if we don't end up with a vaccine?
It would mean that we have to count even more on these treatments, therapies, possible practices like social distancing, a lot more than the average American probably wants to acknowledge. In many ways, it's foolhardy to plant our hopes in a vaccine arriving in the next number of months or years. It might not happen. And if that doesn't, then the social distancing that we have become accustomed to in the past 3 months could be a reality for years and years to come. The idea of a vaccine is understandably appealing. It should be the goal that we are all shooting for. But as part of that, we need to acknowledge the reality that it might not come, and especially not on the timeline that we want.
Dan Diamond, Sarah Overmall, thanks so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Also today, a new book by former National Security Advisor John Bolton is making waves across Washington with explosive allegations against President Trump, including that he asked President Xi Jinping of China for help getting reelected. The memoir is set to be released next week, but according to an excerpt published yesterday, Bolton claims that during a summit with Xi last summer, a month after negotiations for a trade deal had stalled, Trump, quote, stunningly turned the conversation to the coming U.S. presidential election, alluding to China's economic ability and pleading with Xi to ensure he'd win. During a Senate hearing yesterday, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, who was in the meeting, denied that the episode ever took place. The Trump administration has claimed that the memoir contains classified information and could represent a threat to national security, but Bolton and his attorney deny that, saying the book went through an arduous pre-publication review with the White House. And Democrats in the Senate are split on whether to block or try to amend the police reform bill authored by Senate Republicans. Yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell abruptly changed the Senate schedule to bring the new legislation from Senator Tim Scott to the floor next week. That means Democrats now face the prospect of either voting down the legislation and facing charges of obstruction in the middle of national unrest over racism and police violence, or advancing a bill that they say needs massive changes in order to meet the moment. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, who's undecided on how he'll vote, says, quote, a lot of this is determined by whether McConnell wants to ram this through or whether he wants to have an actual debate, saying Democrats are split on the best path forward for, quote, good reason. Meantime, the House is set to take up a sweeping police reform bill from Democrats next week after the House Judiciary Committee advanced the measure yesterday along party lines. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Secure and reliable connections are critical to keeping our country and the economy running. That's why 90% of the U.S. depend on Nokia to stay connected. As a leader in American connectivity, Nokia provides IP routing solutions used by every major service provider in the nation. Nokia technology empowers our country to keep America strong by keeping people connected. Learn more at nokia.com/opentomore.